an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
Sounds like you're very mindful about this.
It's the support group.
Aww.
I have listened to so many people who have had to make this decision. Mm-hmm. I had said when Brian is wheelchair bound, I definitely will need to place him. Although I can modify, it's a rental house, certain things, I'm emotionally not going to be able to cope with everything involved. But I think it might be sooner. It has to be what is safest for Brian. If he's not safe here, then we'll have to do the residential facility.
Maybe the good thing about the support group is that you've seen people make this really hard decision and live through it with all the tears and all the sadness and so much angst. It's such a huge decision.
Yes.
And then you see people on the other side of that.
Dementia Discussions. Here to help and empower our heroic caregivers with knowledge and experience. Dementia Discussions with the caregivers themselves and memory loss professionals. Here to help with 30 years as a geriatric social worker is your Dementia Discussions host, Barbara Hammond.
Hello and welcome to Dementia Discussions. Today on the show, I'd like to welcome back Dottie McLean. I know Dottie from my support group at UCLA. I co-facilitate a group at the Mary S. Easton Center for Alzheimer's Disease and Alzheimer's Disease Research at UCLA. Dottie's been in that group for a while, and we had a conversation, back in September about your husband. And so, Dottie, I'm so glad you're back. It's great to see you again.
Thank you.
Welcome. Last time you talked about Brian, and maybe just give, for folks that didn't hear your first episode, maybe talk a little bit about kind of a summary of Brian, who he was.
Brian is now 75, soon 76, and we're both New Jersey natives. We have been married for 52 years. Brian worked for EPA as a civil servant for 35 years. And he liked to, besides be very involved in public policy at home, he would play the piano. He loved music. He liked to build things. He built our deck. He built a stereo bench. He was always building things. But primarily, he liked to talk. He would talk about anything. And he was always the lead in any discussion.
And you spoke about that last time, that was such a big change in him with his dementia diagnosis.
Yes.
Now he's much more of a listener.
Yes.
Yeah, and less of a talker.
Yeah, we had a Zoom call with his brothers over the weekend, and Brian would just listen to them, and occasionally he'd look to me and say, "Who are they talking about?"
And they were either talking about family members or?
Family members, his niece going back to graduate school. The other thing he does is he'll obsess on something. So they were talking about the snow back east. And for 30 minutes, no matter what they said, Brian would talk about snow.
Keep coming back to the same thing. That's what he could remember.
Yes.
Yeah. So that gives us a good synopsis of who Brian was. And you talked about him being diagnosed and kind of the first year, the second year, the third year, the progression of the disease. And so I guess we're in year what now?
I think we're in year 7. Where we are now, some things haven't changed and some things have changed quite a bit. A friend of mine said to me, "Well, do you have conversations?" And I just had a jolt. We don't have conversations. Brian does monologues. He will talk about something, but if I reply, he doesn't reply back. He'll just be following the track of what he's thinking. and he'll just, he might pause while I talk, but then he'll just continue with what he was saying. He still likes to keep busy, so he will ask me, what can he do? So I had coasters on a table in the living room, and I'm working in the kitchen, and he's being helpful. He brings me the coasters, and he says, where do you want these? And I said, I'd like them back where you found them. And he said, well, someone gave them to me. Now, in his mind, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And I used to get frustrated, and I'd say, no one gave them to you. You picked them up. Could you please put them back where you found them? But now I just go, yeah, right. And I'll put the coasters back. Mm-hmm. If I get up from the table at dinner time, I have to take my drink with me. Otherwise, he'll drink from my glass. He can't remember whose glass is what. Physically, he's getting weaker. We used to be able to walk a mile a day. Now he can only walk around the block. I don't know if his muscles are getting weaker. His knees buckle. He shuffles when he walks. He doesn't understand explanations. He needs to drink a lot of water because he has a history of kidney stones. This is a topic we have a lot in support group. They won't drink. Mm-hmm. Well, a year ago, I could say to Brian, you have to drink. You had kidney stones. And he'd go, mm-hmm. 6 months ago, he would argue with me. He'd say, I've been told to conserve water my whole life. Why do I all of a sudden have to drink water? And then he'd say, nobody but you has ever told me to drink water. I'd say, no. Brian, in the past year, 7 medical people have told you to drink water. Well, now there's no point in even having this discussion because he can't understand an explanation and he won't hear what I'm saying.
That's the walking. Does he have any sort of cane or walker that he's using?
We have a walker because a year ago he had fallen in the shower and he ended up having to go to the hospital. And so they gave us a walker. So we have a walker. And depending on how he is, I will have the caregiver use a walker outside. We also use the walker inside. Where the walker is most helpful right now is he will bend to pick something up and he'll end up on his hands and knees and can't get up. So I bring the walker over to help him get up.
Oh, and he can get up that way. That's great.
Yes. But he has fallen 4 times in the last 2 months.
Oh, goodness. What do they think that's about?
Well, it could be muscle weakness. So I have an appointment with his neurologist to check for that. It could be dizziness due to dehydration. Mm-hmm. It could just be the going backwards in Alzheimer's disease that you're going back to infancy. I don't know.
Is it he stands up and falls down? Like, do you think his blood pressure is dropping? When people are dehydrated, their blood pressure
right.
drops when they stand up.
Is no,
that when he falls? It's not. That's not when he falls.
No, one time he fell because he came into my office and I had something lying on the floor and he tripped on that. But one time he had been looking out a window and he turned and started walking and he stumbled. Another time, now this gets back to mistakes one has made. We were going for a walk and he was slow. And so I opened the door and I went out and sat on the porch and I said, I am going out. And I'm putting on my shoes, and we are going for a walk.
Yeah, you were irritated by this
point. You can hear it. I was very irritated. And he went to walk out the door. I did not see this, but a neighbor walking her dog did see this. He just fell backwards.
Oh, my.
I called the paramedics while the neighbor stayed because I cannot lift him when he's lying on his back, and you can't use a walker. at that point. I didn't dare roll him over in case, because he hit his head on the floor. I mean, that's what I heard. I heard bang. So that time I got the paramedics and they checked him out. And he kept saying, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. He kept apologizing to the paramedics.
Oh.
So another time he was walking and I heard just a noise. And I said, did you fall? And he was walking towards the sofa and he just fell.
You mean on the sofa? He just like plumped down on the sofa?
No, he leaned towards the sofa. So when I found him, he was on his knees leaning into the sofa.
Mm-hmm.
So the neurologist is going to check this out.
Yeah.
Every time it happens, I use one of those handy UTI test strips to see if he has a UTI. That's a urinary tract infection. I have those on subscribe and save with Amazon.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, you're right, because a simple UTI can cause so much.
Because a member of the support group is always saying, if they're disoriented, it might be a UTI.
Yeah.
So.
That's exactly right. And they're hard to detect with a person with dementia.
That's one of the surprises. Well, I'm not sure it's a surprise, but I don't know what causes these things. And I have to follow all sorts of different avenues to try to find out.
Yeah, exactly. Because he can't say to you, oh, I'm dizzy, or oh, I feel my legs are weak.
Right.
He can't say any of that.
No.
So you're right. You're going down all these different paths trying to figure out what's going on.
Right. The other thing is his imaginary life now is all day long. He thinks he is working. So he just lay down for a nap. And he asked me when his paper was due. And I said, it's not due until tomorrow, knowing full well that when he wakes up, he won't remember about the paper. But all day long, he will ask me things about work. The other day, he said to me, did you say no to Vermont? And I said, well, didn't you want me to?
You have to think quickly.
I can't say to him, say no about what? Because he doesn't know what he needs.
Right.
So I just pretend I know and hope that my answer matches what he thought.
And it usually does?
It usually does. You know, if I'm really lost, I'll say, I have that on the computer. Maybe we can look at it later.
That's good. That's a good response. Oh, my gosh. He keeps you on your toes.
Oh, what's disconcerting is when he picked up a placemat, handed it to me, and asked me to read it.
Mm. So he thought it was a paper? What did he think it was?
I guess he thought it was a paper.
Like one of his papers
he'd
written or something?
That's when I paused and walked away, knowing he'd forget about it, because I couldn't figure out how to respond.
Right.
He's more obsessive, so when he eats his oatmeal, he'll eat it clockwise or he'll pat it down.
So he eats it clockwise. Does he leave a portion in the bowl or he eats the whole thing?
He eats it in layers.
And he goes all the way around the circle?
All the way around and he pats it down and all the way around and pats it down.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
And sometimes I have to feed him his oatmeal, which I found surprising. I would have thought evening meal would be the one I would need because he's worse at night. But for some reason, the oatmeal is difficult for him. And sometimes I need to feed him his oatmeal.
Hmm. Is there a contrast? Like, could you serve it in a bowl that's red so that he can see it?
You know what? That's an excellent point. I think it's the 36-hour day or another book that points out you should use colorful dishes. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if he can't see it.
We've got brown bowls. I wonder if that works.
Yeah, I'll try that.
I'll try that. Oh, of course, he doesn't like change. But, he's losing muscle memory.
Uh-huh.
So swallowing pills. He will put a pill in his mouth and play with it. And I'll say, take a drink of water. And he'll take a drink of water. And what he'll do, I've never tried this myself, is he will swallow the water without swallowing the pill. Hmm. And I'll say, you have to swallow the pill. And he'll say, well, nobody told me to swallow the pill. And that's where you clench your fist saying, I just said that 30 seconds ago. But you calmly say, well, swallow the pill. He has two neurologists. One of his neurologists said to me the other day, he can't remember. She said, swallowing involves a lot of steps.
And he can't remember how to do it.
And he can't remember.
Basic reflex, yes.
And it's too complicated, she said, when I give him the pill and then tell him to drink from the glass. That's, and you've mentioned that, break a task into smaller steps. Mm-hmm. So pill taking is getting very difficult.
Can you crush them and put them in his food?
Well, there's a funny story.
Oh, no. What happened?
So people in support group have said, well, I crushed the Seroquel and put it in applesauce. So sometimes I do. He takes, I mentioned the kidney stones, two pills for kidney stones. Allopurinol is a cute little tablet. And potassium citrate is more of a pellet or capsule shape. So he couldn't swallow it. It's too big. So I was crushing it and putting it in applesauce. I was doing this for maybe 2 months. This comes under mistakes I have made. He was at his annual visit with the urologist, and at the end of the appointment, I said, oh, by the way, he can't swallow the potassium citrate, so I've been crushing it and putting it in applesauce. He said, you can't do that. He said, it doesn't work when you do that. He said, it's a timed-release pellet that needs to go through the esophagus and the stomach to dissolve and do its work. If you crush it, you're going to irritate his esophagus. Mm. Now, when I say that was a mistake, when I crushed that pill, I should have notified the urologist.
I see.
I shouldn't have just assumed this can be done for everything.
Hmm. I thought you were going to say that Brian was looked at you and said, I'm getting the pill in my, he was going to question.
No.
Oh, I'm getting, you're giving me that pill in my food. But it wasn't that. It was that it's a time release pill.
He doesn't understand anything I say. I pretty much can talk about him without him realizing that I'm talking about him.
That's a sign of progression, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have Zoom appointments with his doctors, and I will just discuss him. He'll be sitting there, and he'll say, can you explain that to me later? Because he doesn't take it personally.
Right. So realizing you're talking about him.
Right.
He's not getting agitated, it sounds like.
Well, he's not getting agitated when I talk about him. He is getting agitated. I am adjusting his medication.
He doesn't like that?
He doesn't realize
he doesn't
I'm
know it.
Adjusting his medication.
What is he? When does he get agitated?
Oh, he's been getting agitated from about 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock. And so
like
we think... And we think it's because his first daytime Seroquel dose is at 3:30. So what we've done is I've moved it up to 12:30 so that he gets half a pill. So it's 12 and a half milligrams at 12:30. And I did that yesterday and he was calm through the afternoon. That was, again, is he dehydrated or is it that he needs more medication?
Yeah, and it's always a guessing game. You have to try things to figure
right.
it out. It's just trial and error.
Yep. So we're trying that.
So with all of this going on, what's the hardest part for you? I mean, I know we kind of laugh, we chuckle about things, but I'm sure this all must be very hard for you.
One of the hardest things is having a caregiver. I just changed it maybe a month ago. We still have a caregiver 12 hours every night, 7 nights a week. But now we have a caregiver 5 days a week for 8 hours. And Brian and I are both introverts. Mm. Having someone in the house this long is a strain. By mid-afternoon, Brian is hiding from the caregiver. I found him yesterday standing in his closet. The caregiver was in the doorway, just keeping an eye on him. But we had this when we first started, a daytime caregiver 2 afternoons a week. We would spend most of our time, Brian and I, in the bedroom so that Brian could just get a break. This is the second caregiver I've had because the first caregiver wasn't a good fit. She was a wonderful woman. She was helping a lot, but she didn't engage him. They would just stare at each other. I have trouble just having someone here talking all the time, but I can get up and leave. I can go for a walk. I can go work on my computer. In the beginning, the problem I had with the nighttime caregiver is we share a bathroom. The caregivers are male, but what bothered me was not sharing a bathroom. It was that they knew how frequently I get up during the night. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I would lie there and I'd say, I don't want them to know I'm getting up. Well, that doesn't work. You really eventually have to get up. And if you lie there, you're going to be fully awake. So anyway, but both of these men have been there for a year. And so I'm comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. But it is a strain having someone here, even though I need them. And I couldn't survive caregiver.
Mm, huge adjustment for both of you.
Yes. Yeah. I do keep saying it's the disease, because when he gets anxious and I want him to relax and I say, let's watch television, I can see his body won't let him relax. Mm-hmm. He will sit there and he won't pay attention to the television and he just cannot relax. And that thing about the coasters, bringing them to me, it's the disease. He doesn't want to annoy me. Sometimes he will come and see I am agitated and he will just give me a hug.
Oh my God.
Which is, you know, which is so touching.
Yes.
Wow. You know?
Uh-huh. So he can sense that you're irritated.
He can sense, and he cares. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. He still cares. People say it's like dealing with a 3-year-old. I would like to say 3-year-olds are cute. 3-year-olds can learn. Mm-hmm. When you're dressing a 3-year-old, the 3-year-old will pick up his or her foot. Brian won't. It's like dressing a statue. I'm not saying that to complain. I'm just saying his cognition and his behavior is like a 3-year-old, but he's not cute.
Yeah. Yeah. That analogy is so hard for me. It doesn't feel right.
No.
Somehow when people talk about children, I don't know. I mean, here you've had this whole on marriage. He's an adult. He's had a huge career.
On the other hand, mm-hmm. I have a 9-year-old grandson.
Yeah.
And he won't be listening to this podcast, so this won't embarrass him. A lot of the things that I do, I say, oh, I've just been doing this when my grandson was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So I know how to get Brian dressed. I know how to help with toileting. I know how to feed him oatmeal. So in a sense, I have done these things before. Mm-hmm. But when you say, yes, I've been married 52 years, that part of it is separate. I am surprised that when I feed Brian, I don't feel sorry for him. It's just something that needs to be. I mean, I do feel sorry for him, but I can't express it. It's just something to do.
Something that needs to be,
you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's right. Sad. It's so sad that it's come to this.
It is sad, but when I give him a shower, I'm giving, I don't know. It's not intrusive when I give him a shower. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as I'm washing his face. I'm washing other parts of his body, but that's what I do.
Right. That's what you do. After a long marriage, and he would do it for you or hire someone to do it for
right.
you.
Right. Yeah.
So, it is hard not to get caught up in the grief of it all, though. Just the pure sadness of it all. I'm sure, are there times when you just start to cry, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm feeding Brian?
No, I started to cry the other day when I was talking to our son about what we're going to be doing, and I said, I might end up putting him in a residential facility for the rest of his life, and I just started crying. I can say it now without crying because I've had 2 days to think of this.
That's okay. But you can cry. That's such a sad thought.
Yes. So those are the times I will cry.
What makes you think of that? Like, what is it that you think, oh, gosh, I can't handle this anymore?
And this again comes to the 36-hour day. Mm-hmm. That it's Brian's safety. Mm-hmm. He's starting to do things that are totally unsafe. When I'm cooking dinner, we have a Breville oven, and he will come in and he will put his hand on the oven, and I'll say, don't do that, it's hot. The other day, he actually opened the oven. He, for some reason, wanted to clean the stove. And he took a paper towel and he was running it along the front of the stove while the gas stove was on. I mean, a paper towel in front of an open burner in his hand. Mm-hmm. So
it's safety.
That it's safety.
I can't be vigilant. The hypervigilance it would take just to make sure every minute of every
right.
day he's doing, yeah, he's not getting himself in trouble.
He can still take a shower standing up. We have a walk-in shower, but it's not the safest of walk-in showers. He has to step over the ledge. There's a bench there, but when he can no longer be safely bathed, those are the considerations.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're very mindful about this.
It's the support group.
Aww.
I have listened to so many people who have had to make this decision. Mm-hmm. I had said, when Brian is wheelchair bound, I definitely will need to place him. Although I can modify, it's a rental house, certain things, I'm emotionally not going to be able to cope with everything involved. But I think it might be sooner. It has to be what is safest for Brian. If he's not safe here, then we'll have to do the residential facility.
Maybe the good thing about the support group is that you've seen people make this really hard decision and live through it with all the tears and all the sadness and so much angst. It's such a huge decision.
Yes.
And then you see people on the other side of that muddling through. It's an adjustment, right? You mm-hmm. hear people talking about life without their spouse. And you think
yes.
at first, oh, it's going to be such a huge relief. But people talk about this loneliness,
mm-hmm.
right?
So, yes. I'm researching places.
Good.
You know.
Yeah, it's just more tools in your toolbox, really.
Yes.
Options. You're mm-hmm. creating options for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a hard step.
Yeah, it'll be a huge change. And when I start to think about it, then I think about all the things involved in doing it. So I'm trying, I've developed a Google Drive that I'm sharing with our son and daughter-in-law so we can all put little things on our checklist.
Good. Good. That's great. So, trying yeah. to think of everything.
Yes.
And yeah. there are people who help with these. There are move managers. Senior move managers, they're called. So they can help with some of these details.
Yeah.
Yeah. This moving
is and wherever he goes will help with
yeah.
what I mean, like, oh, how many pairs of slacks should I send? You know.
And you know what? He'll be close. You can always bring more
yes.
slacks or more socks or whatever.
Right.
Another sweatshirt, yeah. whatever he needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be perfect right at the beginning. So
no.
You can bring a picture later if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking those yesterday. What picture should I send?
Yeah. I mean, you should just know that whatever you bring, you might want to bring like a copy of the picture because things do travel to other people's rooms and it's amazing. They suddenly sprout legs and suddenly your wedding picture is on someone else's dresser. So.
Yeah, well, that goes along with Brian not knowing whose glass of water is his.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
So, yeah.
So I was trying to think of the name. There's another book that someone else has mentioned on your podcast, which I got. I can't remember the name of it. But throughout the book, she is saying, buy 20 of them. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have 20 pictures. What's it matter if everyone has your wedding picture?
Right. Exactly.
No.
Yeah. It's so true. Another big factor is the financial aspect because having care at home is expensive.
Yes.
And at some point, for some people, it's just not a reasonable option for a long time. Placing someone in one of these small six-bed places or a memory units is oftentimes a cheaper way to go.
Right.
Yeah. So especially yep. if you've gotten up in hours of care.
Yes.
Yeah. It adds up. With all of this, of course, I know you from support group. I know that's one of your main ways to cope with all of this going on.
Well, the support group has just been invaluable. And one other way it has been, one day I was feeling sorry for myself on the support group. And I mentioned that we had just moved here 3 years ago and we had rented this house. I was starting to meet people and the pandemic hit. And so I don't have any friends here. I have our two next door neighbors, but we haven't seen them because of the pandemic. But I do have my brother, my younger brother is nearby and our son, daughter-in-law, and grandson. So I got an email from Monica, your co-facilitator, who said someone wanted to email me. Could Monica give her my email? So she did. And Elaine wrote to me and said, Dottie, you sound like you need a friend. And we have been emailing each other or texting each other. It has been such an outlet because when something happens, I can write to her and say, you won't believe what he did. And she said, yes,
I do.
And I immediately wrote to our son and I said, I have a friend.
I felt great. So good.
I have a friend here. I mean, you can't imagine. All I know is my younger brother and our son and his friends. But now I have a friend. It's marvelous.
That is marvelous. And from the most surprising place. Who would
yes.
imagine? From your support group.
Yes. Our son researched Brian. And he found YouTube videos of presentations. One is Brian did a presentation for a science class in DC. And another is Brian did a C-SPAN interview. I mean, these are years ago. And so I watch them and I've sent them to friends to say, this is what Brian used to do. And it's nice to just look at him and go, oh, yes, that's what he was like. Mm-hmm. I like the C-SPAN one because he was like 40, and I'd go, oh, wow, he was cute.
That's the man I fell in love with.
Yeah, the man I fell in love with.
Aww.
It's so great. And the other thing I do is our grandson has a Nintendo Switch, and he does some fitness games. And so I bought a Nintendo Switch, and I do the same fitness routines that he and our daughter-in-law is doing. So I'll FaceTime and say, so I'm stuck here. What do I do?
That's great. That's and a so, good connection, you know, between you guys.
Yeah.
Really nice.
And I still do, now that I have a daytime caregiver, I do daytime walks. I no longer have to get up at 5:30 when the nighttime caregiver is still here.
Right, right, right. You can walk during the day. And you haven't talked about you and Brian walking in the park together.
Yes. Now we just walk around the block. It's good, but Brian, most of the time, doesn't relate to me as his wife. He relates to me as his favorite coworker. But it is still nice. I'm the only one allowed to hold his arm as he walks. He keeps shaking the caregiver off, telling her, don't touch me.
So you're clearly the special coworker.
I am the special coworker. Yes.
It's nice that you have these things together that you can still do.
Yes.
Look for the moon. You always mentioned that.
Yes. We still look at the moon. Yes, it's visible now in the night sky. So I do carefully walk him outside to look at the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that.
Yes. Oh, sweet.
And recently he's been kissing me goodnight.
Aw.
So at nighttime, at least, I'm not a coworker.
That's right. He wouldn't be kissing a coworker.
He wouldn't. Yeah. Hopefully he's not kissing workers.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. We're just going to keep trying to do what's best for him and what's best for me. If I ruin my health, I'm not going to be any help to him.
Yeah, and we do talk a lot about that in group, keeping up on your own health so that you can be a caregiver for Brian. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I'm prepared for a lot of things. When the paramedics came to lift him, I had my red folder with his insurance data and his driver's license. I just said, here.
Do you have a pulse in there? Did you fill out a pulse with that pink form? It's an end-of-life document.
No, I have all of our HIPAA documents in there. I don't know that one.
Well, we could talk about it, but it's...
One page?
It's one page. Well, it's front and back. POLST. Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
I have our three documents.
Oh, great.
In the red folder.
Mm-hmm.
So...
It's just an end-of-life document.
Right.
Basically says, like, I want heroic measures, artificial means of nutrition, and this. I can send.
That's all right. What I'll do is I'll get it and I'll just dig out legal one that the lawyer drew up, and I'll just make sure it matches.
Right. Yeah. The paramedics do look at it, and people at the hospital, because they want to know if, God forbid, he stops breathing.
When he went to the hospital, I gave them our multi-page one that is notarized.
Yeah, so this is just a simple document.
Yeah.
It says what he wants.
Yeah. Well, that's what he said he wanted. Because he doesn't know what he wants now.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about silver linings. I used to resent certain things that Brian had done. Family gatherings that I couldn't go to because I had to pick him up at the airport. Times he didn't join me at family gatherings because he wanted to go to a meeting with the administrator. And I realized the other day, I no longer resent those because Brian's not the same person. if I mentioned those to him, he has no memory of doing it. So what's the point of my resenting it? Because he doesn't know about it. He couldn't apologize. And it was such a relief when I realized, oh, it doesn't matter anymore. It really doesn't. In the scheme of what is happening, what does it matter that I missed a day in the Catskills? And I missed that day in the Catskills 25 years ago. It doesn't matter.
Right, right.
And I'm pleased with that.
That takes some objectivity.
Yeah.
That you're not going to be able to go back and resolve some of those angry feelings, hurt feelings, right?
Right.
This is not the time now. You're not going to be able to satisfactorily get an apology. Yeah. Which is what you're looking for. He's not capable of doing that. So you have to make peace yourself somehow. Which you are.
It's like two things. One, he won't apologize. But two, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So much is wrong here. That doesn't matter. I let it go. And I'm just living in the moment, grateful for the moments that we have.
Absolutely. You know, the kisses goodnight.
The kisses goodnight. The letting me hold his arm, or when he puts his arm around me.
Very sweet.
So it's nice to know there are good moments in every day. There really are.
And to capture them and savor them.
Yeah. Smile.
Yeah, a smile. A sweet look, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, just to savor those moments. Well, can I check back in with you?
Oh, yes.
Yes? Okay, good. Because now I want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll be good to if you're willing to come on back down the road, which would be
absolutely
great.
Absolutely.
Good, good, good. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here today. I so appreciate it. I appreciate
you,
your honesty, how candid you are. I know other people listening will get a lot out of your story. So thank you, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. It takes courage because not everyone's willing to do that. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.